This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
On April 11th, 2002, a huge demonstration numbering close to a million people marched on Hugo Chavez's presidential palace to demand his resignation. Led by Pedro Carmona and Carlos Ortega, the opposition represented a broad cross-section of society that was furious with Chavez's mishandling of the economy and his interference with Venezuela's oil industry. When the march was met by National Guard troops and Chavez loyalists, a bloody gun battle ensued, sparking a military revolt and the ousting of Chavez. Over the ensuing turbulent 72 hours, Venezuela would go through three presidents, and the Venezuelan people would be forced to confront the deep divisions within their society, and ultimately to set the course for their country and its rich oil supplies into the new century. The new book is The Silence and the Scorpion, The Coup Against Chavez and the Making of Modern Venezuela. It's an honor to welcome to this program investigative journalist Brian Nelson. Brian, welcome to the program.
Thank you very much for having me, Coy.
Absolutely. So tell us, first off, where did the book come from? I mean, when did you go down there and realize, hey, I got a book here?
Right. I've always been fascinated with Venezuela. I actually went to high school there way back in the 80s. I don't want to give away my age, but it was a while ago. And I'd always wanted to do something about Venezuela. And after I finished graduate school, I went down with a Fulbright grant with a mandate to write a book. And I chose this event because it kind of gave me an opportunity to focus on something very specifically. I'm someone who really loves history, but oftentimes I feel that history is not done history books aren't written in an engaging way. So I felt that writing about these 72 hours and by focusing on the people who were there, I could make a much more kind of human history. So this book is more in the vein of a book like The Perfect Storm or Black Hawk Down, where I really kind of drop the reader right in the middle of what begins as a street massacre and then what evolves into an uprising and a coup against Hugo Chavez.
So, it's been called just mesmerizing narrative journalism, what you've done here. And the little bit that I've read of it is really gripping and amazing. And you're right, it just grabs you. You're right there in the middle of the story. Before we talk about Chavez, can you give us a Venezuela 101? I'm one of those Americans who, this is such a black hole for me. I know they got oil.
Yeah.
and I know that the conservatives in America make Chavez out to be the devil.
Yeah.
But other than that, I'm clueless. So educate us about, give us a sort of pre-Chavez and Venezuela leading up to Chavez, and then we'll talk about him and what's going on there today.
Sure. Absolutely. You're absolutely right. I mean, Venezuela sits atop the largest oil reserves outside of the Middle East. I mean, hands down. They have more oil than all of Russia. They have more oil than Canada, more oil than the United States. So strategically, it's obviously a very important country. That oil means that Venezuela is a strange sort of paradox third world country, because you can go there and see the latest model Hummers and Mercedes driving down the streets, and yet that's contrasted with these amazing shanty towns that dominate the scenery around the capital. I mean, they're really almost overwhelming it. So it's an incredible place of contrast. It's a very kind of lawless place. It's a place where, for example, in the city of Maracaibo where I lived, you can buy what's called a vacuna. It's called like a vaccination. Because carjacking is such a formalized industry, you can actually go and get a window sticker and put it on your car. And as long as you do that, the carjackers will not rob you for a month.
You're kidding.
it just kind of shows you the extent that,
wow,
like many countries in the world, it actually has good laws on the books. You know, the Constitution is actually very good. But no one tends to follow the law. So, I actually have a friend of mine whose car was stolen, and he went back to the place where he'd bought his vaccination. He said, "Hey, what's going on here? I paid for this vaccination. Why did my car get stolen?" The guy's like, "Oh, well, hold on. Let me have your cell phone number. I'll sort of see what I can do." And a few hours later, the guy gets a call back and says, Oh, we're really sorry. We stole your car by accident. We'll make it up to you. We're going to leave it to you in the shopping mall. You can go pick it up. And just to show you that we're sorry, we're going to put new rims on the car for you. So it's that kind of place. And, of course, that's sort of a funny anecdote. But there's also a darker side to that. Venezuela is a very violent country. In fact, in just the last 10 years, the murder rate in Venezuela has doubled. It's gone up 100%. Kidnappings are very common. In fact, this is a country with just 25 million people, but it has 100,000 murders a year,
which is an
outrageous figure.
Yeah.
And of every 1,000 murders, only 3 people will go to jail, because it basically is a country that does not have an effective judicial system.
Yeah, it's not a country of laws.
Right.
You can
write
them down. Doesn't mean you're a country of laws.
Right, exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly.
We're talking with Brian Nelson. His new book is The Silence and the Scorpion, The Making of Modern Venezuela. So, Brian, who is Hugo Chavez? Where did he come from, and what's his story?
Well, Hugo Chavez is kind of at the crest of a wave of sort of this leftist revival that we're seeing throughout Latin America. We have Hugo Chavez in Venezuela, we have Evo Morales in Bolivia, we have Correa in Ecuador, we have Daniel Ortega in Nicaragua. All of these countries are sort of in this resurgence. And it's interesting to note that all of those countries I named are actually very pro-Cuban, okay? So there's this interesting kind of resurgence. And the reason that this has kind of come about is because most of the programs that the U.S. supported throughout the Cold War and the neoliberal sort of development model that was pushed by the United States and the World Bank and the IMF, most people in Latin America view those programs as failures. In the case of Venezuela, basically from 1980 up till 1999, the country experienced a very painful 20-year recession, okay? And capitalism more or less collapsed in Venezuela, and that was what sort of gave rise to someone like Hugo Chavez, someone who could come in and say, hey, I'm going to start a revolution, I'm going to start from scratch, we're going to have a new constitution. So, you know, you can't just look at Chavez in a vacuum. There's a historic sort of push or a backlash, really, against the neoliberal sort of economic model that's predominated in Latin America through the Cold War and up through the 90s.
We're talking with Brian Nelson. His new book is The Silence and the Scorpion, about Chavez and Venezuela. We'll be giving away a free copy at the end of the interview. So throughout Latin America, then, there are these new leftist revolutionaries with gaining a lot of traction with a lot of popular support.
Mm-hmm. Exactly, yes.
And so Chavez is emblematic of that in arguably one of the most powerful and rich countries in Latin America.
Absolutely, yeah. In fact, it's kind of interesting because Chavez likes to sort of paint the United States as the imperial empire. He gets sort of a lot of mileage out of calling George Bush the devil in front of the UN. But what's kind of interesting and a little bit ironic is that Venezuela is really outspending the United States in the region. Okay, in 2007, for example, the United States only spent about $2.3 billion in the whole region, and most of that went to Colombia. Hugo Chavez spent $8.8 billion. Okay, so he's spending a lot more money. He's trying to influence politics with his petroleum money. He's setting up TV stations that broadcast throughout the region to sort of promote his ideology. And obviously some of the other not so legal things he's done is supporting groups like the Colombian FARC in Ecuador. So Chavez is becoming very influential. He's using a lot of different strategies to sort of win over people all over Latin America.
So what's the reaction? I mean, you've been on the ground there in Venezuela.
Mm-hmm.
Do they just love him? I mean, do the people just think he's just fantastic and doing so much for them?
Well, it's kind of hard to tell, you know. In fact, sometimes I suspect that Hugo Chavez is actually more popular outside of Venezuela than he actually is in Venezuela. It's actually difficult to, even though he continues to win elections, it's actually kind of difficult to say how popular he is. You get some kind of these conflicting sort of results. As far as the elections, you know, Chavez has been reelected president twice. He has won several important referendums on his rule. But it's kind of hard to say, a little bit like the situation recently in Iran, if it's legitimate or not, because there's quite a, again, sort of like he uses a lot of strategies to get his ideology out, he also uses a lot of strategies to sort of influence the elections. Okay, for example, in 2008, during the regional elections, Chavez was able to bar hundreds of opposition candidates from even running. Okay, so it's kind of hard to say, you know, how popular he is. Other important figures like Manuel Rosales, who was the mayor of Maracaibo, probably the most one of the most important adversaries of Chavez, was recently forced into exile because Chavez came after him on corruption charges. So Chavez literally came on TV and said, "I want that man in jail," and then a few weeks later, a federal prosecutor pressed charges against him for corruption.
Yeah.
So there's it's hard to kind of tell how the elections are going.
Brian, let me ask you this. Mm-hmm. Some folks in America, especially on the right, are very quick to dehumanize and turn, you know, any third world leader, dictator or not, mm-hmm. who is sitting on oil and doesn't do what we say, we very quickly demonize him.
Right.
And make him into this third world devil and stuff. Mm-hmm. Is that the case here? I mean, or is this is that an accurate kind of thing that we could say here? Is he a real threat to the United States, I guess is what I'm trying to ask.
I mean, it's hard to say. I mean, there are some serious legitimate concerns. I mean, again, it comes back to this sort of response to, you know, kind of where Chavez came from. Again, the neoliberal programs that were pushed throughout Latin America during the 70s, 80s, and 90s really emphasized that these countries just had to export all their oil money, and that they had to cut certain important programs like health care, schooling. Okay, so Chavez is really kind of a response to that. He's come in and said, "Okay, I'm not going to do that anymore. I'm not playing that sort of economic game."
Venezuela is not here for America's total benefit.
Right, right, yeah. Exactly. So he's spending a lot of money on health care, a lot of money on education. Okay. And that's helped make him very popular and win him a lot of support.
But he's still crooked.
there's a lot of shady stuff going on. And one of the problems with, for example, the health care is that he tends to help only people who are allied with him. So it'd be sort of like President Obama only helping Democratic governors or Democratic mayors. Okay, so Chavez tends to give that financial support, sends the doctors in or sends the money for health care to the areas he knows where people are loyal to him, or where the governors are loyal to him, or the mayors are loyal to him. So,
yeah.
For example, one of the things I've written about recently is contrasting sort of what Castro was able to do in his first 10 years and what Chavez has been able to do in his first 10 years in rule. And unfortunately, Venezuela has three times the gross domestic product per capita of Venezuela, or of Cuba, I'm sorry. So there's a lot more money, okay, in Venezuela. But Venezuela also has three times the infant mortality rate of Cuba. Okay, so obviously Chavez has not been as successful in getting the money to all the poor who need it. And one of those problems is that he tends to do it in a very kind of politically motivated way. Fashion.
Yeah.
He tends to give, you know, like I said, he only gives his allies the money. And so if you're a poor person living in a district that doesn't have a pro-Chavez governor or mayor,
you're screwed.
You're out of luck. Yeah. Yeah.
Brian Nelson is the author of the new book, The Silence and the Scorpion, about the making of modern Venezuela. So, Brian, look into your crystal ball. I mean, where does this go from here? I mean, is this another third world dictator sitting on oil that, you know, once the day will come when America sends in troops? I mean, that seems to be our MO.
You know, I'm not sure. You know, one of the things is that Chavez is constantly kind of threatening to cut oil supplies, but I don't think he can. I don't think he can afford to do it. So some people, even in the diplomatic corps that I've talked to, are like, "Well, we don't really take Chavez that seriously. We kind of take his rhetoric is what he needs to do to sort of rally up his people." But if you look, you know, and what they say is basically he's denouncing the United States with one hand while he's busy signing new oil contracts with the other. So, you know,
yeah.
it's hard to say if it's really not in anybody's best interest to change that sort of long economic relationship.
So as long as the oil is flowing and as long as he's keeping it on the dollar,
right?
Then you know the troops don't move.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, it's hard to say, but I think more than anything, the United States is really not sure how to deal with him. Okay, when looking at sort of our emphasis on the war on terror and the Middle East, the U.S. has been pretty negligent about what's going on in Latin America. And I think this sort of wave of leftism that we're seeing is in part due to sort of the United States' lack of strategy or lack of kind of knowing what to do.
Before we let you go, what's going on? I read something recently about Honduras. What's going on in Honduras?
Yeah, it's kind of a fascinating situation. It's I was trying to think of a parallel. The president there was woken up in the middle of the night, put on a plane, and sent out of the country. And it was orchestrated by the head of the legislature, who's actually in his party, and the Supreme Court. So it's always be as if Nancy Pelosi and got the Supreme Court to send Barack Obama out of the country. But what's interesting about it is, in relation to the coup in Venezuela, is that there seemed to have been a legitimate reason why President Zelaya in Honduras might have need to have been put on trial or impeached. There are some serious allegations there. But the opposition went about it all the wrong way. You know, there might have been a legal precedent or a legal way to handle it, but waking the guy up in the middle of the night and sending him out of the country is completely illegal.
Yeah.
And that's similar to what happened in Venezuela. There's a legitimate reason to think that Chavez or people very close to Chavez had a hand in the violence that sparked the uprising. Okay. But the problem was that the opposition, they just kind of arrested Chavez and tried to ship him out of the country. There was no trial. There was no sort of proper impeachment. And in both cases, we've seen that the opposition has lost its legitimacy because it didn't follow a legal precedent.
It is a mesmerizing narrative. The new book is The Silence and the Scorpion, The Coup Against Chavez and the Making of Modern Venezuela, author Brian Nelson. Brian, thank you so much for joining us. It's been great.
Thank you very much, Coy. It's been a pleasure.
Absolutely.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit cvillepodcast.com for more.